In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. This scripture should sound very familiar to you. I'm sure you recognize the first two verses of Genesis chapter 1. Well, today we're going to talk a little bit about the very beginning of the creation story from a biblical perspective, and how it compares with the stories of the initial creation from the ancient Near East and the ancient Egyptians. So join me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic. Using words correctly, so I'm going to start by providing a little clarity on two key terms you'll hear me mention today. You've probably heard of the first term, cosmology. It refers to a scientific study of the universe as a whole and its properties. Cosmology seeks to answer fundamental questions about the nature of the universe. On the other hand, cosmogony refers to the study of the origin of the universe. This is usually from a cultural or religious perspective. Many cultures have their own unique cosmogony, meaning beliefs about creation that reflect the beliefs and values of that particular culture. The two terms cosmology and cosmogony are often used interchangeably, but they're actually different. And when we study the biblical account of creation, we are reading a cosmogony, an explanation of how God created the universe. First, we're going to examine some creation ideas found in the ancient Near East and Egypt, and then we'll compare those with the Bible. I want you to see how distinct and special the biblical account is. Now, this is a broad topic, so I'm going to keep it focused on a few key comparisons. In ancient Egypt, there were a number of different beliefs about the origin of the universe. There were four cities in Egypt that were the main theological centers, and each one had a different approach to creation. Some scholars even consider them to have offered kind of rival theologies, but we can see some similar elements in their creation myths. The cosmogony from Heliopolis is perhaps the most well-known. There were personified waters named Nun, and from these waters evolved or self-developed Atum, the creator god. Now, I'm going to just address pronunciation for a minute. I am not good with some of these ancient names. I did take a study about the ancient Near East and ancient Egypt in some of my doctoral studies, but I don't remember how they pronounce them. And when you go online, you get lots of different variations. So the two options for this particular god, A-T-U-M, is Autumn, sounding kind of like fall, autumn, or Atum. And so I'm going to go with Atum, but if I happen to mispronounce or butcher some of the pronunciations during this, please understand. The pronunciations of these names is not my expertise. So we have Atum, and the evolutionary process began with the sudden appearance and development of an egg within the waters of non-existence. After a long but undefined period, the egg, or Atum, rose and floated to the surface of the waters, where it evolved into the primeval mound or hill where Atum then stood. And at this stage, Atum and the mound were basically a unity of undifferentiated matter, like kind of like a cosmic stem cell. The egg and the mound were Atum at different stages of development. The belief was that Atum was a primordial mound from which arose all of life. And then he spewed out of his mouth the god of the air and the goddess of moisture. From these, other deities were brought forth. With the creation of space, air, and sky, Atum evolved even more to become the sun god called Atum Ra. This Egyptian creation myth from Heliopolis shows a belief in the spontaneous generation of a unique life form from which all other life developed. Another theological center in Egypt was Memphis. In Memphis cosmogony, the belief was that Ptah was combined with the land that rises. Atum was still seen as the creator god, but Ptah, who was the god of Memphis, was identified with Nun, the abyss from which Atum came. So Ptah was seen as the supreme deity. In Hermopolis cosmogony, the primeval waters were given four characteristics: depth, endlessness, darkness, and invisibility. And each was represented by a divine couple. Then these eight deities formed a primeval egg, which, when hatched, brought forth the created order. When we look at ancient Mesopotamia, there isn't literature from that period that still exists that systematically recounts the details of creation. But there are numerous aspects of creation that are mentioned in a wide range of Mesopotamian literature. Tidbits of creation are gleaned from a variety of sources. One scholar likened it to trying to determine the story of creation by reading the Book of Psalms. So, plus, there is the difficulty that the span of millennia of civilization in ancient Mesopotamia and Egypt had this opportunity for ideas to evolve. So scholars have been able to piece together information, but it's not in any type of systematic structure. Probably one of the most well-known of Mesopotamian literature is Enuma Elish. It consists of seven tablets that tell of Marduk's ascension to the head of the Babylonian pantheon. The first tablet deals with cosmogony and theogony. As I mentioned previously, cosmogony is the creation of the universe. Theogony is the creation of gods. In Enuma Elish, the beginning simple element was two bodies of water. They mixed and then acquired spontaneously divine procreative powers. Gods were born out of a mingling of the primeval waters, as if they generated themselves within the bodies of water. And then those gods engendered other gods. The writings focused more on theogony, the ancestries of the gods, than on the development of the actual physical universe. Interestingly, scholars have tried to cite detailed similarities between Genesis and Enuma Elish, but the parallels are superficial at best. Also, the writings seem to show Marduk and the other gods spending their time more organizing within the cosmos rather than creating the matter that made up the cosmos. So Marduk appears like more of an organizer than a creator. Now, this was just a very brief glimpse into some of the creation myths. What we're seeing in these stories of creation is not only cosmogony, the creation of the universe, but also theogony, the creation of the gods themselves. In both Egypt and Mesopotamia, cosmogony was intertwined with theogony. What these different beliefs have in common is the idea that the creator god was somehow contained within this basic substance from which everything else was derived. In the Mesopotamian civilization, as in Egypt, there was an assumption that everything that existed went back to a simple element, and then the simple element diversified itself, which is similar to the idea of evolution. And from these stories, we can see that one similarity with the biblical account is that there were primordial waters, like an abyss. But that's about it. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Just this first verse gives us several key points. First, there was an absolute beginning for creation. The world was not created somehow by nature's cyclical rhythm, but it was a creative act by a transcendent God. God alone existed prior to creation, and He alone is the creator. Second, God is completely separate and independent of nature. He acts upon nature, but He's not part of nature. Emanation is a theory that all creation flows from an infinite, unchanged primary substance. The idea is that all things emanate or flow forth from this divine substance. With the story of Atum, supposedly everything was in the cosmos was compressed in him. So in a sense, he wasn't a creator, but a source. Everything came into being literally from him or out of him. There was a spontaneous generation of divine life out of which a process of diversification was initiated that brought into existence everything else. In contrast, God did not produce things from his own substance, and he didn't create the universe using pre-existing materials. By an act of his will, he spoke things into existence from nothing. He created the whole system of nature, but he's completely separate and independent of nature. Third, God acted in fiat creation. He held the position of power to speak authoritative commands and create something out of nothing. The verb translated as to create in this verse is special. The Hebrew word is bara, and it means to shape or create. Whenever this verb is used in the Bible, God is the subject. So God alone is the creator, and no one else had a hand in it. Also, this verb is never used in a way that implies that God was creating using pre-existing matter as his stuff of creation. The verb bara, along with the emphasis on the phrase in the beginning, indicates that creation was made out of nothing. Fourth, this verse indicates that the object of God's creative activity was the heaven and the earth. The word translated as the heaven is hashamayim, which is actually a plural word. So some English translations say the heavens. And the Hebrew word translated as the earth is haaretz, which can mean earth or land. Heaven and earth have not existed from all eternity. They had a beginning. Creation depends on God to be sustained, but it's separate from God. And let's take a moment and look at verse 2 of Genesis chapter 1. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. Now, there's a lot of things we could say on this, but one thing I want to note is that here are the similarities with the myths of the ancient Near East and Egypt are that there was darkness and deep waters and kind of a lack of formation. But whereas the myths have a god or gods being formed from the waters, the biblical account clearly says that God's Spirit moved upon the face of the waters. God was not in the waters, and he was not formed from the waters. He was above. The Hebrew verb to hover is rachaf, and in the PL form, it means to hover, to move gently, or to brood. The Hebrew preposition al means upon, above, or over. God was definitely over the waters and not in the waters. He is self-existent and did not evolve or need to be formed. So where did the ideas for the myths come from? Well, I think two sources are plausible. One is that the Egyptians and Mesopotamians observed nature and drew conclusions from it that they then projected back to primeval times. For example, the idea of the primeval mound may have come from the experience of the annual flooding of the Nile River. In the summer, the river would swell and cover the flat land. When the waters receded, mounds of fertile mud were visible, and then with the sun shining on it, new life exploded on them. The Egyptians may have concluded that there was life-giving power in the water and then in the mound. In Mesopotamia, the rivers bring silt and form alluvium. The sweet waters of the rivers meet the salt waters of the sea, and they deposit their load of silt and form new land. So these natural observations could have led them to speculate about the formation of the earth. But I also believe that many of the stories that we find in ancient myths and legends are variations of real events that, through time, became distorted. Assuming that the biblical account is true, which we know that it is, then it is plausible for various cultures to have begun to revise the accounts to fit their beliefs and practices over time. That's why sometimes it's frustrating that scholars will point to parallels between the Bible and other ancient texts and assume that the biblical writers borrowed or stole material from the other texts. But we know that the biblical writers were inspired and wrote under the unction of the Holy Ghost. And we can see how easy it would have been for cultures to modify the original truth. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Why did Moses start his historical writings with this sentence? Because it is a declaration of God's primeval creative activity in which the cosmos was called into being. Moses knew the prevailing views of creation. He had been raised and taught in Pharaoh's household. We can safely assume that he was well aware of the Egyptian myths of creation and probably knew of the Mesopotamian myths as well. Moses was countering the prevailing views and setting the record straight about creation. The biblical narrative can be used to deconstruct the stories of mythological origins that were common in ancient times. Compared to the other creation narratives, the biblical narrative is distinctly unique. There is no theogony in the biblical creation narrative because God was not created. He alone is the one and only creator.